From the AutoLine Studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on AutoLine this week. You know, on this program, we typically talk about the new cars and trucks that are coming out, all the new technology that's coming out with them, maybe some aspects of design or even advanced manufacturing. Today, we've got a totally different topic, one that is not well known within the automotive industry and definitely not outside of it. And that is the philanthropy that the car companies and even most of their suppliers engage in. And I've got three experts to talk about that today, including David Reuter from the Nissan Foundation, who also does a few other things for the company. Pamela Alexander is with the Ford Fund, and Greg Martin is with the GM Foundation. And great having all of you here to talk all about this.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for having us.
Pamela, I'm going to start with you.
Of course.
Being philanthropic, it's nice, it's good, it's the right thing to do. But as a corporation that's got to answer to shareholders, to Wall Street and the like,
right.
What's the value? And what's the return to the company in being philanthropic?
Well, you know, Ford is more than 100 years old, and this is not something new for us. Henry Ford started with community engagement 100 years ago. Our executive chairman, Bill Ford, says, a good company makes great products and services, a great company makes great products and services, and makes the world a better place. It's about innovative solutions. It's about supporting communities. Ford Fund, the philanthropic arm, was started in 1949, where the company goes, we go. And now as a global company, we recognize how important it is to invest in communities where we go and where we have operations throughout the world.
Greg, same question. And especially because General Motors has been under, you know, so much pressure for shareholder value and all these things.
And I don't think we should make apologies of it. The more research we see, customers are predisposed to want to do business with a company that they feel shares their values. When we look at our employee surveys, Workplace of Choice, employees want to be proud of the company that they work for. So this is really good for the bottom line. It brings new customers in, and it retains some of our best employees.
David, same question.
Yeah, I think Greg nailed it. I mean, you certainly have customers, people in your communities that you want to endorse your brand and buy your products. But from an employee standpoint, so much of what we do is about enriching the lives of our employees and the communities where we're at. And so this gives us an opportunity to do that. We put our money in the communities where we have operations, where we have big employee populations. And our surveys come back and tell us the exact same thing. Employees feel so much better about working for companies who they know are doing good things in the community.
Well, Greg, you mentioned, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's a great topic, John, because for all of us that were familiar with the deep-seated troubles that the industry went through in 2008, trying to picture what would have happened to this state, to the city of Detroit, had the industry collapsed. When you look at the foundation, this is really the heart of the companies. These are the companies going in and serving and improving the communities where they do business. And it gets lost in that when you're enamored with the hardware and the bottom line. So it's great to be here and talk about it.
Right, and we get that question a lot because it is a cyclical business. And one thing that I think we recognize is that it's really important to be a good neighbor in difficult times. That's when people really need assistance and need help, need job training to be trained for the jobs that are out there. Young ladies need, you know, STEM, young girls STEM. A lot of girls aren't entering STEM these days. Ford's very invested in STEM education for women because it's important that women are exposed to those careers. So it's a very well-rounded approach to investing in communities.
So in terms of this giving that the company does it follow cycles too, or do you want to keep a pretty even keel, whether it's good times or bad?
Well, Ford Fund is not an endowed foundation. We are funded annually by the company. So I think that says a lot that even in difficult times, we continue to be funded. So the levels do change a bit when the economy is a little more difficult, but there's always been funding for Ford Fund. So it may change a little bit. Some of the levels might be a little bit lower, but we're still there.
Mm-hmm. David, same approach at Nissan?
Yeah, absolutely. We have the Nissan Foundation, which actually stemmed, it was originated in 1992 following the race riots in LA. And it's built on a key pillar of education, cultural diversity. And we put funds in to programs throughout the country to help people understand different cultures, understand diversity a little bit better. And by doing that, we found that it really helps people to understand what Nissan is about. And it really mirrors what we're looking at in terms of the cultural diversity of our owner base. Nissan has the most culturally diverse owner base in the market today. About 38% of our consumers are culturally diverse. And so when they see companies who are putting money into the communities and educating people about that, they feel better about buying a product from us.
And you look at, you know, to Pamela's point, cycles will come and go. But when you look at the important work that's being done at the Cancer, Karmanos Cancer Institute or the Center for Creative Studies, those needs are there. I mean, this is an investment, a long-term investment, regardless of cycles. When you look at research needs and investing in students to hopefully improve their prospects, they shouldn't be beholden to any cycle. So we try to keep a steady state of funding.
How do you get this funding then that's being done by the companies? Who determines what monies are involved and how do you go and get the money from those entities?
Well, I'm sure it's the same for my colleagues here. I mean, we have a board that represents different aspects of the business and the company, also the community. So we sit down and we determine what are our key focus areas, what are priorities. We keep a constant dialogue and in touch with a lot of the key leaders in Detroit and the city, and that's how we come about determining.
But you're talking about a board for the GM Foundation.
Correct, yes.
Now, do you have to go to GM management or the GM board, or how does that
work? The support from Mary Barr and her leadership team has just been bedrock, and so it's good to have that going in. Again, we have a cross representation of leaders on the GM Foundation board that really have some strong relationships within the community. So we have a direct line on what's needed most, where it's needed urgently, and then the board votes on it, and that's how we go about it.
Yeah. Pam?
And for us at Ford, it's interesting. A lot of people say, oh, you give away money. We actually consider it an investment. And much like the other investments the company makes, we are part of the business plan at Ford. So we again look at our priorities. These are the things that we want to do. We want innovative approaches so that we're constantly adapting to what the community needs. And then we have a five-year business plan, just as any other program does in the company. So we have a business plan that's part of the company structure, and so it goes to the board each year.
Pamela, I want you to explain, too. A lot of people hear about the Ford Foundation.
Right.
Ford Foundation,
right.
Very well known. But right. Even though it started with money that was given to it right. By, I believe, Edsel Ford.
Yes, first. There was some family involvement initially when the Ford Foundation was funded. However, Ford Motor Company Fund is the philanthropic arm of Ford, and Ford Foundation really.
Two totally separate organizations.
Yeah. They're in New York, and we're here in world headquarters.
Some people know that, but I think it's
right.
still unclear
it's
to many,
point.
So I wanted
Absolutely.
To ask about that. And David, how do you get your money?
Well, Nissan Foundation is an investment fund that we set up. Obviously, the original monies to start it came from Nissan, and over the years, it has gained in value, and we disperse a certain amount every year. Usually, it's around $700,000 to $800,000, and we go through a grant cycle at Nissan. So, entities, organizations that would like us to contribute to their charity will actually submit a grant for us to consider, and so we go through this grant cycle usually every June or July, and then we disperse the monies usually in the late summer.
Greg, how do you determine? I mean, you've talked, you've got great relationships with different entities, but how do you prioritize? I mean, what are you trying to achieve here?
Well, it's difficult, and you touch on it. One of the most difficult parts of this business is prioritizing, because everything's important to the group that you support. But if everything's important, nothing's important. And we look at areas of education, promoting STEM, science, technology, you know, those skills that could have a direct application to the auto business. What are we doing to cultivate the next generation of engineers that may want to work for us? And then we look at the immediate needs of the community. How can we help Detroit in its ongoing resurgence and renaissance, if you will, to help them not only with infrastructure, but to provide the schools and the quality of life that not only benefit its residents, but also make the area more attractive for prospective job applicants.
But I've got to believe you're looking beyond just the city of Detroit, too. I mean, as a big corporation.
When you look at hundreds of plants around the U.S., we have a value at the company to serve and improve the communities and where we live and operate. So we have a program at each of these plant locations around the U.S. of safer, healthier, and smarter. and it's been a great venue for our employees to get engaged. Imagine thousands of GM employees giving back to their community, and you mentioned dealers and suppliers, and I think this is true for also Ford and Nissan, that when you look at the scale of the auto industry, it has incredible potential and I think a responsibility to leverage that scale to do good things in the community, because we touch so many states and so many communities around the U.S.
And Pamela, how do you determine, okay, there's a crying need out there. I'm sure people hit right. you up for money right. all the time.
We get that question a lot. You know, we have four pillars at Ford Fund. Education, teen driving safety, our Driving Skills for Life program, community need and community life. Our fourth pillar would be volunteerism. We have an amazing volunteer corps. So we provide grants in those areas, but we are a global company, so our grants are global. So it's everything from a well for fresh water at our Chennai plant in India to our new Ford Resource and Engagement Center in Southwest Detroit. And as was mentioned, it's also our dealers. Excluding what we do at Ford Fund, in 2014 alone, our dealer body invested $100 million in community organizations throughout the U.S. So it's really a partnership approach. Well, we're doing so much, but we have to give credit to our dealers, of course, because they're out there in the communities every day with huge investments in the community.
And what does the Ford Fund itself give, irrespective
of the deal? Fund was approximately $40 million in 2013, we reported.
And Greg, GM?
Over the past decade, nearly $250 million in the U.S., and most of that, over $100 million to Michigan, and a lot of that right into the city of Detroit. Right.
You know, I don't want to be crass talking about, well, how much money did you get?
Right.
But people want to know. I mean, they want to know what's the scale of what you're talking about.
Since we started, we're roughly $1.5 billion.
Man, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Also, David, you guys have a sort of a subset that you call Nissan Neighbors. Talk a little bit about that program, because I'm not that familiar with it.
So separate from the foundation, we have Nissan Neighbors, which is about a $3.5 to $4 million a year giving plan. And we go into the communities where we have plants, where we have big facilities. Detroit is one example of that. We have 1,200 employees here in Farmington Hills. And we are giving to organizations small and large with that contribution. Probably the biggest pot of money goes to Habitat for Humanity, which we have about $1.5 million a year connection with Habitat. That started in 2005, coming out of Hurricane Katrina. We gave 50 Nissan Titans to the humanitarian relief down in Louisiana, and that has just gotten stronger and stronger. And we continue to foster that relationship.
Greg, you had mentioned employee involvement, and I keep seeing things, and Pamela, I'll get to you in a second, because it's the same thing.
Right.
Your employees love to pitch in, especially on projects like Habitat for Humanity.
Well, I think our employees are a secret weapon. When you look at 3,000 employees last summer that I think cleared out 170 blocks in the Cody Rouge neighborhood in downtown Detroit, they're going to do it this summer in the Osborne neighborhood through Life Remodeled. When you look at over 1,500 dealers over the course of a decade that donated more than 2 million car seats to families in need that young people are properly restrained. I mean, this is really the heart, the face, and the voice of the company. It's the company beyond the numbers, beyond the sheet metal. And again, it really, I think, solidifies our position in the community in this country.
Pamela?
Right. No, the Ford Volunteer Corps is something that's really, like you said, it's part of our heart at Ford Motor Company. It's actually part of when you become a new employee at Ford. That's one of the things you hear about on your first day, is this is how you can become involved, because it's so important to our employees. It's on six continents and dozens of countries. We have a global week of caring in around September 11th, generally around that date, where our employees from around the world will engage in hundreds and hundreds of projects. And then we have Accelerate Action Days. I mean, just thousands of hours that our employees put into the community through our Ford Volunteer Corps. It's an amazing, amazing part of our company.
Greg, same thing? GM doing this on a global basis?
We do. I mentioned our plant city grant program, a safer, healthier, smarter. We have employees that are not only helping rehabilitate neighborhoods, but giving them their time mentoring young students, volunteering, at dealerships and car safety seat inspection. It's such a heartening part of the business, but it goes and says a lot to who we are as a company.
And David, I got to imagine Nissan does the same sort of thing.
Yeah, we do. It's all under a bigger umbrella of something called Blue Citizenship for Nissan. But in so many ways, humanitarian relief is one of the pillars that we operate under globally. And you look at the Tohoku earthquake back in 2011, all the way to what happened in Haiti, to some of the natural disasters that have happened here in the United States. And we've had employees come from all over the world to help employees in those other markets rebuild some of their communities, and it's created a great atmosphere.
How do you measure your success? I mean, you sure you're giving out all this money? Do you keep going back to the same places, or what do you do to make sure that you're really getting the return that they're spending the money wisely?
It's a really good question because it's really easy, I think, to just look at what you've always done and just sort of check the box and say, okay, we're going to give to the same organizations that we always have. We do have a checks and balances process that we go through. We analyze how the programs are developing, what impact the funds we're putting into these communities is having, both on our employees and on the communities themselves. And from our standpoint, we talk to our employees a lot. One of the greatest stories I ever heard was we had a gentleman who built cars for us down in Canton, Mississippi, had never left the state of Mississippi, and we sent him on the Carter Work Project through Habitat for Humanity down to Haiti to build homes for people who had their lives taken away in the earthquake. And he came back with stories and a new focus on life that he was just telling everybody about. And it was just an amazing experience to see it.
It's a good trend that I'm seeing it. There are really good firms out there that are trying to quantify this and measure it in a very, let's say, forensic-like manner. And we've engaged them. It's not simply enough for us to say, this looks good and this seems to be the right thing to do. How do we measure that and make sure that the outcomes, whether it's putting a number of students through school, whatever, really measure up to what we're doing. But at the end of the day, it's not as gratifying. I've been lucky enough to travel around the globe. I was down in Colombia, and there's a program that takes prospective students in really hard-hit areas and teaches them automotive skills. And to see that person given the opportunity to better their lot in life, you will, working for General Motors is gratifying, very gratifying.
And Pamela, how do you measure success?
You know, and it is interesting because some programs are more easy to measure. We have the dealers have a program, Drive for Your School, where they provide funding to schools for test drives, has, since it started 7 years ago, provided $25 million directly to schools. And in these days of school cuts and things like that, you can't see necessarily directly, okay, well, this many students did this, but that's important. We know, for example, at our Ford Resource and Engagement Center, 2,000 people had their tax returns done that wouldn't have been able to because of our free tax service. So there's any number of ways that we measure. We are constantly looking at impact, and we're always changing. For example, we just launched a program for female veterans. Because one thing that has been made aware to us is the need for help for female veterans coming out of service, their unique needs. So we literally just started a program based on that metric. Okay, we're having success with these reboot programs for veterans, but let's target now women because they have specific issues. And so we will be tracking those women to see, okay, how many of them are able to enter the workforce, how many of them are able to, based on the needs they identified coming into the program, succeed in this program for female vets.
Do you ever run into situations where you go, dang, here's a great need. These people have got a great story, but they don't fit into the pillars of what we're trying to achieve?
We try to look at things, everything from basic needs through economic empowerment, job training, to quality of life as we look at community needs. So we have certain things, for example, we do not fund animal programs, for example, or religious organizations if you look at our website. But there are so many different ways to view education. Sometimes education is a scholarship so a child can go to school. Sometimes it's a program for elementary reading to get you up to the correct reading level. And sometimes it's a scholarship to help that senior in college pay the last $5,000 they need to pay, or $2,000 or $500, so they can get their diploma and then work. So there's just such a broad range of need out there that we're very proud that we're able to have an impact in any number of ways.
Those are actually the hardest conversations to have. Yeah. But if you're consistent and disciplined with what your objectives and your pillars are, at least you have a foundation to say, no, I'm sorry, this doesn't fit.
Yeah, it comes into the old phrase, you can't water all the flowers. Right. And when it comes down to it, health and wellness is a pillar that we don't support at Nissan. We do education, we do environmental, we do humanitarian, and we get a lot of requests to fund organizations from a health and wellness standpoint, and it is always a tough discussion, but it's just not something we do.
What's the biggest change that you've seen since getting involved in doing this, Dave?
In terms of, in terms of what the impact is?
Lessons learned. What have you thought, hey, this is really good, this works, and maybe here's things that we shouldn't be doing anymore? Yeah.
Well, I think the biggest thing that we've noticed is people do notice. Communities notice, employees notice when the company is supporting organizations that are in need. And it helps the way that individuals feel about working for Nissan, and it helps customers about how they feel about purchasing from Nissan.
Greg, lessons learned?
I think we're going to continue to see a more of an emphasis on matching programs to very, very clearly measurable and identifiable outcomes. And it's simply not going to be doing good just because it feels good. I don't think that there's any reason to apologize when you look at the demands of not only the community but other stakeholders, that there needs to be something that ties back to the bottom line. What's good for business, again, bringing in new customers and keeping your best employees.
Pamela?
I think the expansion to become global has been a big change for us over the past several years. And also, I think we have become much more program-based. I think there was a time, especially in corporate philanthropy, where grants tend to be very much more general operating, not just, you know, with a lot of companies. And a lot of us, and especially at Ford, we are really targeting it so that we can have a community impact. It's about maximizing impact and really helping communities. So I think that there's been a shift away from the kind of the more general funding that used to be provided.
And if I gave you, you know, if I waved the magic wand and said, now you can go out and do whatever you want to do, what kinds of things would you love to see your organization push into?
Is that for me?
Yeah, sure. We'll start with you. I'm sorry. I put you on the spot, but that's okay.
You know, I think we have, with our driving skills program, we have a great program. We have great core programs. We have signature programs in each of our core areas. So I would really like to just see them expanded and grow to reach as many as possible. Our driving skills for life program, our teen driving program, is our number one global program. We cannot do that in enough places, and you can't make enough teens safe on the road. And especially as you look in some countries like India and China, you're talking about new drivers. They may not be teens, but they may be new to driving a car. So I think I would really stick with our core programs. I think we've got those right. I just expand them even more
okay.
reach.
Okay, Greg, I'm waving the magic wand for you as well.
I think when we look at this this new generation that's entering the workforce, that would be post-secondary college level, that what can we do to help them have a clear line of sight to where they can meaningfully contribute to the economy? I think, and I see this around the globe and certainly in our travels, that you have a generation that's coming out and their prospects seem somewhat dim based on current economic conditions. What can we as a company give them, not only the set of technical skills, but those professional skills that really engineer them for success, if you will, get them into the economy, getting them to meaningfully contribute, and then in turn, you know, buy cars and live the dream, if you will. And I think that's one of our challenges going forward.
Yeah, it's actually exactly what we're looking at as well at Nissan. Just last week, Thursday, we made about $250,000 donation to six historically black college and universities in Mississippi, where we have a factory. And those monies are going to go directly to STEM education, to robotics programs. And to get those young people interested in those technologies is going to possibly give us an opportunity to employ some of those students longer term, keep them in the state. Congressman Benny Thompson, who we work with very closely on that donation, loved the fact that we might be able to keep some of those individuals in the state of Mississippi and keep them into manufacturing jobs moving forward.
Pamela, you had mentioned how much your dealers give as
well.
And is there a way that you coordinate with other stakeholders, whether it's supplier companies? Because I know a lot of the big supplier companies give a lot, too. And as you mentioned, the dealers. Any sort of coordination?
We actually have a program. We have an internal name called Operation Better World, but it's a new program. It's not as new. It's 7 or 8 years old now, where we partner with our dealers in select cities, in 25 cities throughout the U.S., to do targeted philanthropy based on community needs. The dealers are very much involved. I was just with one in Kansas City, where we were saluting unsung heroes in Kansas City. But for example, our dealers in the Pacific Northwest, in addition to supporting hunger programs in five states as a unified group, they collected peanut butter last summer, because it's not just about the money, but they're also just putting their heart into it. Collected peanut butter because the food hub said over the summer kids don't eat, and peanut butter keeps. So they collected thousands and thousands of jars of peanut butter and donated it to food banks so that the kids at the end of the school year could take it home and they'd at least have something to eat for part of the summer. So it's $100 million is a tremendous amount of money. But through our Operation Better World, as we call it internally, program, we're also working with dealers in 25 cities throughout the U.S. to do targeted philanthropy based on their on the ground. I want their opinions and their thoughts on what the community needs.
And I'll hasten to add, peanut butter's got a lot of good protein
exactly.
in it, too.
Exactly. It's healthy. It's got protein. There was a lot of peanut butter being stored at dealerships.
Great.
Last
Real
summer.
Quick. We're down to the very end. Do you guys coordinate with dealers and
absolutely.
Others as well?
Absolutely. Any service men or women watching, they are our force multiplier. And they know what's important to us, and they go out, and they're terrific partners.
David?
Yeah, same thing. Our 1,200 Nissan dealers love it when we involve them in the CSR operations because they are able to put money right back into their communities, which draws customers right back into their showrooms.
It's a great story. David Reuter from the Nissan Foundation, Pamela Alexander from the Ford Fund, and Greg Martin from the GM Foundation. Want to thank you all. Great having you on here. Great
Thanks.
Story.
Thank you. Great to be
Hope
here.
You all enjoyed it as much as I did.